The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
When Gooch gets back up into the pocket, like, I remember trying to practice this for about 6 months after I was nearly dislocated. He does it two or three times in the first half. It's sensational.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high-cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetZetGo.ie.
It is time for us to turn our attention to hurling. I'm delighted to welcome James Scale back to the show. James, the week of a championship like this where it's beginning to get serious, the training has all been done. What's it actually like to be involved in a camp where you're hurtling towards the championship and things are getting real?
How are you guys? It's very exciting. I know I'm a country boy at heart here, but it's a bit like when you let cattle out of a shed at winter. They go jumping their lap, and it's kind of the way it is in training, let's say, in the last week or so, just in preparation, because everything has culminated this week. So when you get your winter programs back in a standard year, should I say, in October, November, and you start in at the gym and you're running in the dirty nights, it's pouring rain down top of you, and you're basically miserable. All that's in your head is the championship week. You say that keeps you going as such. And I suppose guys have been lucky in one sense that the league has been so close to the championship this year. So they've had a run of games prior to the championship and have a good bit of practice. But everyone's excited, like everyone's looking forward. There's this touch of nervousness too. Like you obviously have guys who are guaranteed to start on the team. You know, most teams would probably have maybe 10, 11 guaranteed starters, and there's probably 8 or 9 guys who are vying for the last 4 positions. So those guys are kind of nervous, trying to do everything right. They're looking over at managers to see if they're looking at them. They're waiting to see if they're going to come over and talk to them for a second to announce that they're going to be on the team. He says. So there's a touch of nervousness for some, but mostly excitement for most.
Presumably from a player's perspective, there's not really much you can do to alter the manager's thinking at this point. It always seems to me like managers have a bit of confirmation bias going on, and they'd need to have had in their head most of the big decisions made a couple of weeks back. And yet at the same time, they need to keep everybody on their toes to the point where everybody believes they still have a chance.
Yeah, and that's the issue as well. Like that some managers would say, some are better than others, should I say, at that. And in my experience, that has been the case, whereby their management skills have been impeccable and they've been able to keep the 30, 35 guys all in sync and going in the same direction without creating any much of a division between, let's say, the starters and the guys who are on the fringes. And let's say when management is not going well, you can nearly sometimes see cliques creating where starters would nearly kind of form groups of their own and say, that's a terrible, terrible environment to be involved in. But like if a team is going to be successful, like you've got to prepare well, play well and get a bit of luck. So if you're not preparing well, which is something you do most because of kind of, I suppose, let's say a bad relation or a bad vibe from management to players, and say that's detrimental to a team. And I think, I said from my own experience, let's say you could always get a vibe, you know, you'd get it weeks out. Like you'd know there'd be A versus B challenge games inside and training like 4 or 5 weeks out from championship games. So you'd know how the manager or management team, should I say, were thinking. You'd know even by the level of interaction, you know. So if the manager is kind of, I'll say, stonewalled you a bit somewhat, I say that loosely, you know, stonewalled you a bit somewhat, you can nearly guess that you're not going to be involved terribly. But the real settler is the A versus B game. So like those games go right up to a week before championship. And generally the last week, the A team is put out entirely to get a sense of, I suppose, a bit of a game together, get a bit of feeling together, let's say, in pattern of playing and whatnot. So it's a funny one for managers. Like I think it's very difficult to actually physically manage, because every player that goes into a county team is obviously the best player in their club. There's no doubt about that. So they'll have been used to being the number one guy or girl in their club for many years, let's say, underage level up into senior. And every time they go back to their club, they're champions, that they're the main person. When they come into a county environment, then they don't know where they are in the pecking order. So that's a bit hard to take from a mental perspective for the player to kind of transition from being top dog in the club to kind of one of the pack in the county team, let's say. And other players take that differently. I've seen guys who have walked out, you know, in years previous, let's say, when they haven't been on a starting 15 or 26 because they thought themselves to be higher in the rung, you know. So it's a tentative one for managers. But I think most managers nowadays, they're not nearly, from what I see, the top tier managers, they're more man managers, let's say. I know Bill Gates said before, let's say, the secret to good business is delegation. And that's what managers seem to have done, let's say, when you look at the Jim Gavins and the John Kiley's. They have a team around them, let's say, to manage everything, or they then manage the group as such. So I think that's kind of transitioned out of the whole setup now at the minute, and players and management alike are becoming more interaction from a personal perspective as opposed to a sporting perspective.
If you get stuck into some of the games then that will get the championship underway this weekend, James, if you start with Leinster, Dublin against Antrim, 3 o'clock on Saturday, Laois against Wexford at 6 o'clock on Saturday. We touch on Wexford there, you talk about the power of delegation. Do you think Davy Fitz has the art of delegation off to a tee yet?
I did say top level managers, didn't I? So no, I wouldn't put. I don't think that delegation has really been. It's tricky on that one to say. I've had Davy Fitz in college. Don't get me wrong. I say delegation wouldn't be one of the words that he'd have. You know, I'll put that way to you. Wexford are a tricky one, guys. I look at Wexford and like they're a team. Let's say they're kind of. You know, their class is a top-class team. I wouldn't have them in the top four or five. I would always view them as being a team that they nearly have enough, but they don't have enough. You know, their forward unit, say, they don't score enough. Let's say the guys there, I don't think they have the quality up front. They have fantastic athleticism. There's no question about that. They have fantastic fitness. But every team across the board has that. So you go to any team, let's say, at top level, they're all going to be as fit as each other, and predominantly they'll be as strong as each other. But what really breaks it down, then, say, is obviously tactical, and then the actual skill of the hurler you have, and the actual hurling ability. And I look at Wexford, and I just don't see they have enough. Like in the last four championship games that Wexford has played Galway, you know, they've been beaten by an average of 8 points, and they've only scored 17 points at the tops of that. So I just wonder where the scores are going to come from, you know. And like in those four same games, like Galway has scored, I think 27, 29 points in two others. So their defence offers a bit of leakage too as well. And I just don't see their defence holding out top level forward lines, and I don't see the forwards, you know, taking down top level back lines. So I Wexford and Laois, I think they'll come through Laois, obviously. You know, not trying to diminish Laois' capabilities, but I think when they come up against Kilkenny in the semi-final, that could be dangerous for them.
Was the forwards, the firepower in the forwards not an issue in 2019, or how did they manage to get so close then?
That's a strange. I just think, you know, I think momentum is a big thing in hurling too, guys. Like that game in 2019 with Galway, they drew 16 points apiece, I believe. And I just think Galway were suffering from a hangover from the 2 years previous, both mental and physical, you know. So they got a bit of a run. They got through the group by score difference, essentially, with a last spin a point against Kilkenny. And they just got a good draw, do you know what I mean? And they should have beaten Tipperary, let's say, when they were a man up, but they didn't. You know what I mean? That's the size. Like, Tipperary had a man down, let's say, when John McGrath got the line. And, you know, they didn't finish off Tipperary when they had them there. Do you know what I mean? When they had them there. And, like, the good teams, if you put in that year, let's say, if you put in most teams, I should say, against Tipperary when a man down, they were going to come through. You know, I just don't think they have it. I'm not trying to be dismissive or negative towards them in any way, shape or form. I've played them enough times to see that their passion, their game style is kind of repetitive, if I'm honest. I know David Fitz said last year after the semi-final, the Leinster semi-final, that they tried, five different formations. I saw one formation, maybe two. So I don't know where they're getting these formations out of. They didn't work. You know, they were beaten by 9 points or nine points, yeah. So I'm not sure where all the tactical knowledge, like where let's say, do they think they're more tactically ahead of people than they actually are, you know? So I know I'm being very negative towards Wexford, being dismissive, but look.
No, I mean, so that's the whole point. We've got to try and establish where the tiers are at this stage. If you were in charge of Wexford, like with this group of players, or is there anybody out there who could do things differently with this group of players and catapult them into that top tier?
Yeah, well, you're looking at the best coaches, aren't you? Like, you're looking at what Paul Kinnock has done with Clare. You're looking at what he's now done with Limerick. You know, he's transformed a team, let's say, who have been there, they're almost there, but not quite there, let's say, and brought an Ireland to them both, you know? Like, so he's the kind of person who come in with a serious air of positivity and no off-the-field baggage. You know, that's a key thing as well. Because I mentioned a few minutes ago about prepare well, play well, get a bit of luck. The preparation for Wexford has been staggered, in my opinion, let's say. There've been too many highlights or lowlights, should I say, in the public eye with regard to off-the-field activities and on the field or on the sideline, should I say, activities. And they don't need that distraction, do you know what I mean? And like I've been in the dressing rooms with David Fitz, like, and it's an intense place, you know what I mean? It's quite a, how would I put this lightly? It's quite a hyper dressing room, I put it that way to you. So the concentration levels could be focused elsewhere, if you get me. I'd be looking at it like a Paul Kinnock type person who'd be really good, really genuine. Like, they brought in Niall Corcoran, who was a good hurling man as well, a Galway guy, who spent a lot of time in Dublin. He'd have a good hurling knowledge, but I don't know how much of an influence he's allowed to have there, should I say. But I do think as well, this possibly could be, in my opinion, the last year for Davy. I think there's going to be a change coming this year, because like they've had relatively minor success. They got a Leinster Championship, which is great. But I think that county now is looking for more, especially when you see budgetary figures, what's being implied into the team.
Okay, that's all really interesting, because I guess last year, if what happened last year happens again this year, then that makes obvious sense. If they get back to the level they were at, where they're in an All-Ireland semi-final and the game is in the melting pot, again, it'd be interesting to see how if the group has learned how to manage their way through that. So if they're short of being contenders, is anybody close to the Limerick team at the moment? Are Tip and Galway the obvious ones who are there?
Yeah, you're right. Tip and Galway, my rankings for all they count for. Limerick are a clear number one. They have a degree of separation from the rest of the pack at the moment, and I think it's been well publicised about all they do well, and they do very little not well. Then I think I have Galway number two, and then I have a split between Tipperary and Kilkenny as giant number three. I can't separate either or. The game, whatever way a game goes on a certain day, could separate those by a point or two. And then after that, then you've got, again, not to be dismissive, you've got the rest. You've got Clare, Cork, Waterford in a pack, and then Wexford, that let's say, with Dublin coming after. You know, it's a difficult one. I just think that you're looking at where Limerick stand right now. I'm not going to quite say they're where Kilkenny were in the mid-2000s or late 10s, say, but they're not too far away from it, to be honest with you. They haven't got quite the dominance that Kilkenny have had. But although if you look at the names in the cups over the last couple of years, Limerick have been, I suppose, shoving everyone out of the way. But I think it's going to be a different type of championship this year. I think Limerick, what they've done is this has been the same thing over the last couple of years, albeit very effective. But I just see maybe there's going to be a greater challenge to Limerick. Like, they won't be winning an Ireland final this year by 11 points like they did last year. It'll go down to the wire big time. And I think that you've got the likes of Galway and Tip Kilkenny who are going to challenge the most.
You just got a text in here, James, comparing the eras of Davy Fitz to Jose Mourinho, where almost after a couple of years, things start to, I don't know, grind down or maybe the level of early success isn't replicated. Is that a legit comparison, do you think? Is there something that you've seen that after a little period of time, that things maybe aren't as good or as fresh as they were in those opening couple of seasons?
Yeah, like I modernisation, I think, you know, my time with Davy was back in 2007. We won the Fitzgibbon Cup with LIT. So you're talking 14, 15 seasons ago. And he's doing this, it looks to be, let's say, on the field, right, and technically speaking, doing the same things now as what was done back then in the college times. And I do agree that whoever checks in there is onto something as well, because Mourinho, he came out of the blue, let's say, didn't have the best playing career, should I say, but then just blew up with Porto, and then he got such a massive run of success. And if you just disregard the Waterford final, let's say, for Davy in 2008, where they were hammered by Kilkenny, and go after that, let's say, it culminated in him being successful with Clare and then kind of having a great influence at Wexford. And, you know, sometimes a change is good as a break. So, like, when he went down to Wexford, that change kind of rejuvenated everyone at Wexford and created an air of kind of positivity. And that culminated in for me, the peak being the Leinster Championship, you know, 2 years ago. And I don't think they have reached similar heights. Obviously, they haven't reached similar heights from regards to everywhere. But off the field and on the field, I don't think they're where they need to be to challenge the top three or four. And I think that, as I said to you, I'm going back, I think this could be the last year Davy is in Wexford, and I'm calling it now. I think he could be in Dublin next year.
Right. Well, that'll be pretty interesting. Because the Dubs obviously just beat Galway last night in the under-20s, and that was a Galway team absolutely festooned with All-Ireland winners.
Stacked is what that Galway team was stacked. It was very disappointing. Very, very disappointing. You know, I'm not just saying because we lost Dublin. It was a Leinster final, say, but it was, you know, I thought it was a good route, if I'm honest, to get to an Ireland final, especially after taking down Kilkenny last year. It was surprising, you know. I thought we were very wasteful. You know what I mean? Like from an individual basis, I know individuals come for sweet if all, let's say, on a team basis, but individual basis, we have outstanding hurlers in that team, especially in our forward unit, and we just didn't score enough. Like, we were quite wasteful in front of goals. We had three clear-cut goal opportunities that were, you know, denied by a good save or just wrong decisions, you know. And, like, I think Dublin needed that game too. They had a kind of a stuttering league campaign, if you like. They're going into a game against Navan now, whereby they need a bit of positivity. Like, Matty hasn't had the best league or championship game in the last 18 months. So with those 20 guys coming back in now, and they're saying well done instead of hard luck. So it's good for the vibe in the team as well, and just adds more positivity to the whole thing. Whereas with Galway, the good thing is I don't think there's too many guys on the senior panel. I know Derek and Goals and TJ at full back, let's say. But I think the Galway team is seasoned enough, let's say, to just override that result and move on to senior championship.
Can I go back to one thing there? You were saying if Paul Kinnaird was to leave for whatever reason, and you know, again, this is idle speculation, but if he was to take over a team like Wexford, are the raw materials there in Wexford, or indeed any of the other counties at the moment, with the right coaching to put the challenge up to Limerick? Bearing in mind, you've compared Limerick to the great Kilkenny team, which is considered to be the greatest team of the modern era. Like, so, do you know, I know they're not there yet, is what you said, and that it will be closer this year. Is coaching capable of making that much of a difference that almost any of those top teams in the right hands could put it up to Limerick on an All-Ireland final or semi-final day?
Yeah, I just think he's... Like, now, don't get me wrong, I've never met Paul Kinnaird. I've never been part of his training session. I've just spoken to guys who have been within the setup and who speak rave reviews about him, let's say, and they would give me snippets of things he does, he says, drills, he operates, and the way he operates on a personal level with people. And now, when I'm saying Paul Kinnaird, I'm including the whole management team as well in that. But if you consider, go back a couple of years ago, would you have thought, I mean this respectfully, would you have thought the Morrissey's or Gareth Hegarty would have reached the heights they have? Even Graham Mulcahy, who I'd be friendly with, and he'd be my age, Graham Mulcahy didn't set the world alight in his first, let's say, 7-8 years of inter-county hurling. And then he exploded. He exploded under Paul Kinnaird and got an Ulster, you know, when they won their Ireland. So I do think coaching has a huge part to play. And like, I've watched Limerick, some of the Limerick guys in club games, let's say on television last year, and lucky enough to see them, and they didn't stand out. You know, some of them didn't stand out. They didn't stand out in a way that you'd see TJ with Ballyhale or you'd see Cathal Mannion with the Hatchet. They just didn't stand out that way. And I just think it's all part of, you know, the group, the setting, the way they set up tactically. And I think so. If you had Paul Kinnaird and you brought him down to Wexford, I think there's great tangibles there. Like I said, they've got great quality player, like an individual. But that's why I said at the start of the conversation, their backs unit and their forwards unit aren't firing each for each other. Now, I just think that if someone went in with a new voice and they changed things up a small bit and gave a different perspective, maybe more modern perspective, that Wexford could turn it around. Like they have the tangibles there, they have the finance, you know, they have the facility. So like if in a mad world that he did go down, he would make a huge difference to Wexford. And again, like from a bookies perspective, Wexford would go from number 7-8 up to, you know, 4-3 straight away. That's the influence I believe the Kinnaird would have. Right. A Kinnaird type person.
That's really interesting. There's one last thing I wanted to get your thoughts on. We're always interested in trends and trends in the game. Some suggestion in various places recently that maybe giving 5 points for a goal might change the way that the game is being played at the moment, because we're seeing such high scores in terms of the points being scored. I'm not even asking about that really, but is the trend, is there anything that might change the trend back to teams being goal hungry?
Yeah. Like, I do think if you incentivize teams to go for, like, even if you raise it to 4 or 5 points, yeah, you're putting more pressure on the goalie, first of all. But I think we do have to do something, guys, because, like, I just did a bit of research there over the last week on the whole points situation. Like, in the last 5 of Ireland finals, there's been an average of 25 points scored, whereas the 5 previous, there was 18. So that's a huge difference in a final. You know, 7 points is a huge... It's a huge distance, like, and the points situation is just getting a bit out of control, because teams are looking at it and they're saying to themselves, we don't have to do it. You know, we don't have to go for goals because we can just shoot the lights out. Because when you mix the hurdles, the slitters, the condition of the players, you know, and the quality of where they can shoot from shooting zones, that all leads itself towards scoring 30, 35, and we could potentially see 40 points in the championship game this year, which is, I don't know, has that ever been done. There does need to be a degree of incentivization. I wouldn't like to see, I know I spoke about it before, a heavier ball. I like to see the ball modern, just kind of modified a small bit. I would like to see, I'd love to see forwards, and I mean this in a good way, the full forward line, I'd love to see them be capped and not being allowed to cross the line. You know what I mean? I'd love to see them, let's say, if you picked an imaginary 30-yard line and say, right, full forward line, you're not allowed past that line inside. I think that would help the situation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It would definitely help, let's say, the get around ultra-defensive teams, if you like. But I agree with you guys. Incentivization is key. How we go about it, I'm not too sure. I know we trialled the sideline cut before with 2 points. I think guys got around that and they started shooting sidelines from all sides. So that had to come back, you know, with Joe Kenning and Noel McGrath and whatnot. So if you did go for 5 points for a goal, let's say, I think there would be a lot more direct hurling. I think it would cut out an awful lot of, you know, middle-third passing, as they call it, in you know, inter-section play between between guys who were only 10, 15 yards apart from each other. And again, it was so evident in last night's game. There was guys just shooting passes for 10, 15 yards, sometimes for the sake of it. I think it's just now ingrained into the pattern of play for most teams at the moment because it's popular. You know, it's what Limerick are doing, and it, that's kind of the magic portion out to a successful team, you know. So 5 points per goal is a good shout. Good shout. I wouldn't like it as a goalie, though.
Cork won 140 against Westmeath in 2019, I think, is the record, James. So you can see that being you can see that being surpassed at some point.
Yeah, I think with respect, the gulf in class between Cork and Westmeath, let's say, would have been substantial at the time, let's say. So 40 points would, yes, albeit it would be a surprise, but with that specific game, not so much. I think if you're looking at, you know, a Limerick versus a Cork now, I'm not going to say it would happen, let's say. If 40 points was hit, my God, that's an element of madness entirely.
Yeah.
You know, that's when you have quality opposition who are very close-ish. That kind of score is just eruptions.
Let's see if it happens against a Division One team, and at that point there'll definitely be a symposium on what's going wrong. James, this has been brilliant. Thanks a million for joining us this morning. Cheers.
No bother, folks. Thanks.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Black Box Car Insurance lets young drivers bounce past high cost premiums. Drive safe and save more with GetSetGo.ie.